happy to announce that the Fretboard Journal now has three presenting sponsors. These are three brands that are behind us with everything that we do, including the podcasts and the videos, and they include Carter Vintage. Carter Vintage Guitars, where guitar lovers go for a good time. Gibson Guitars, only a Gibson is good enough. And last but not least, Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Can't thank these three brands enough for being presenting sponsors. Thank you, guys. Hey, gang. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Verlinde, the publisher and founder of the Fretboard Journal magazine. As always, that's John Rauhaus playing in the background. If you have not headed over to fretboardjournal.com lately, maybe you just subscribe to this podcast via your favorite provider. I encourage you to go over to our website because we've launched something called FJ Fest. We launched it right around the time this coronavirus pandemic hit the Seattle area, and now obviously everyone is staying at home across the nation. Hopefully you are staying safe and hopefully you are staying sane. But basically, FJ Fest was our attempt to keep our community connected, let guitar collectors show off their collections, let luthiers show off their workshops. It's an opportunity for us to all kind of learn together and geek out together, and it has been exceptionally cool. So I want you to go over there and see what we have. Not only do we have amazing music performances, I'm sure you've all been inundated with live streams from your favorite artists right now. It's kind of what we're all doing to stay in the loop with each other. But we've got so many cool builders who have opened up their garages and opened up their work tables and workbenches to all of us. And I have learned so much. It has been such a gratifying and cool little experience during these kind of depressing times. Go over there. If you're listening to this podcast, chances are you're into Martin Guitars. We had TJ Thompson, the world's foremost Martin guitar restoration expert. I think I can say that with a straight face. It's true. He gave us a 30-minute guided tour of his workshop, including, I mean, this guy's so next level. The place is solar powered. He's got lathes. He's got all the old world stuff and the hide glue, but then he's got CNC machines and a plec. TJ thinks about things on a different level than anyone else I know in this world and is one of the most beautiful people I know. So go watch that video at fretboardjournal.com. We also have cool stuff like this guy that I've been following on Instagram. His name there is DJ Lava Lamp, Chris Vincent. He makes treble booster pedals, and he gave us a guided tour of his workshop, which is his apartment. And we see how he is recycling old components from reel to reels that he finds at thrift stores and turning them into exceptionally cool, period correct, treble booster pedals. Retrograde Guitars, another cool smaller builder, showed us how he laminates sides and or his backs for his guitars. On and on. We are getting on a daily basis emails and video links, and we're sharing them as fast as we can while we still put out the podcast and the magazine and everything. It has just been a really amazing, gratifying thing. So go to fretboardjournal.com, click on any of those, and then you can click on the FJ Fest hashtag and see the entire lineup. I know folks have been wondering how we're doing here. Everybody here is fine. We're all hunkered down. We're all working remotely. We have printers and we have backup printers and mailing houses that are all still operating because printing is considered an essential business in most parts of the country. So we are taking it day by day, but we are producing the Fretboard Journal's long-awaited Electric Guitar Annual Volume 2. That'll be out in a couple of weeks. And the Fretboard Journal's 46th issue is going to be coming out in about a month or so, hopefully. And so we have plans in place, and we are business as usual, as much as you can say that right now. And we would really love your support if you haven't joined us yet. So if you go to fretboardjournal.com and click on the subscribe button, you can either get the print subscription, or we also now have PDF digital subscriptions. And if you do that, it's $30. And you will get the two most recent issues on the house as well as the next four issues. So you will have plenty of reading to do while you are staying at home, and you will learn about all sorts of cool characters. We are a reader-supported magazine, and we will be even more of a reader-supported magazine, I fear, after this pandemic is over. Hopefully it's over soon, because I think that the some of the newsstands that we're at aren't going to be quite around as much, and that's really depressing. But you can make this magazine immune to whatever is going on outside in the world by just subscribing and showing us your support. It's also a great way for us to just connect with you better. We send our subscribers special offers and newsletters from time to time, and it's great to be able to tell folks who read the magazine in Nashville that we have an event in Nashville or in Seattle or what have you. So, and we will get back into the event business after all this is said and done. So today on the podcast, we are talking to a repeat guest, Fred Green of Martin Guitars. He's the VP of Product Development at Martin. Obviously, Martin's factory is shut down right now, and talking about new products is kind of an awkward thing when a company can't make new guitars. But Fred is such an insightful and warm guy. I truly love this guy. He has no BS. He is just a fountain of knowledge and a great thinker. And someone who I didn't know until a year or two ago. And so I welcomed him onto the podcast. And we do talk about, you know, Martin had a really rad new guitar this year, the SC13 that they unveiled at the NAMM show, that I think turned a lot of people onto the brand who weren't normally Martin aficionados. But we talk about a lot more too, just getting through the day, how a company of that size is dealing with the pandemic, and a lot more. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. Before we get to that, we do have a couple of sponsors who help this podcast out. They've been with us a long time. I hope they will continue to be with us for a long time. First up is our friends over at Mono Cases. You can go to monocreators.com to see their entire lineup of gig bags and laptop bags and everything they do. I'm going to guess not a lot of you folks are buying gig bags right now because there aren't a lot of gigs to go to. But it dawned on me the other day that now is the perfect time to work on getting that pedal board organized for those folks out there who like the effects. Mono has a full range from I only have a few pedals to I have a ton of pedals. They are all bulletproof. They are all ridiculously well made, as everything Mono does is. And I encourage you to go over there. This is a great time to kind of not only reorganize your bookshelf, but also your pedal board, maybe your life, who knows. Go to monocreators.com. And the folks who own Mono Band Lab also have some of the coolest things going on in the industry outside of Mono, and I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that they also are the folks behind Tysco effects pedals, as well as the Harmony brand. And for some strange reason, at the NAMM show, Harmony unveiled one of the coolest things I've seen in a long time, a budget, limited edition, hand-wired 8418 Harmony tube amp, a little 5-watt, sort of reissue of that classic amplifier. It's only $399. There are still some available on Reverb. So head on over there, see what I'm talking about. We put out a podcast called The Truth About Vintage Amps. I co-host that. And the main guy there, Skip Simmons, hopefully you've tuned into that podcast because it is a hoot. He hates printed circuit boards. This thing is hand-wired. This thing has no printed circuit boards, which is pretty much unheard of these days for tube amps, but it looks cool. Check it out. Also, we are sponsored once again by our friends over at Retrofit Vintage Guitars in New York. Now, if you've been reading the Fretboard Journal for a little while, you have seen at least one Martin guitar that came from Retrofit on our cover. Ry Cooter owns the Ralph Trotto Martin Dreadnought that came from Retrofit and decided to feature that on our cover. And I'm looking at Retrofit's current listings right now, and they've got some pretty other nice Martins. Nothing from Ralph Trotto, but a 66 Martin 018, a 1949 0018, and moving up the luxury scale ladder, a 1941 0018 that looks amazing. They also get these amazingly cool guitars you're not going to read about anywhere else. Right now, they have a 59 Epiphone Crestwood. This is a guitar that cost the equivalent of a 59 Les Paul back in 1959. And is ridiculously rare. I think it's one of 43 made that year. It's sort of like an Epiphone take on a Telecaster, but from 1959. I'd never seen one before. Check that out if you haven't yet. Go to retrofret.com. If you do reach out to them, by all means, please tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you so they know that this is working. And can't thank everybody enough for supporting the podcast. even during these trying times. We want to be here for you every week, as we have been for, 7 years now? It's been a while since we've been podcasting. Nothing else to report. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Fred Green. I do hope you will go to our website and check out those FJ Fest submissions. If anybody out there has a cool, maybe it's a Martin collection, whatever it is, if you want to tell a story, if you want to show us your workshop, festival@fretboardjournal.com is the way to submit an entry to that. And we're not asking for any money or anything. This is just our way of keeping people connected. I know we have a huge backlog of luthier workshops we are formatting and editing to post on our site, so you're going to dig this, and we're just going to keep doing this, I think, until the world is sort of back to normal. Hopefully it's going to get back to normal. All right, without further ado, here is my conversation with Fred Green. It's an unusual one. It's not the typical banter you would have talking to a rep from a company, but I think you will enjoy it. Fred, welcome back to the Fretboard Journal podcast. The last time we talked, it was under a little bit different circumstances. We were not social distancing, and we were in Nazareth, and now here we are via Skype. How are things going?
It's a lot strange. Right now, both our factories are down. Both Nazareth and Navajoa, our Mexico factory, are closed. And we're a little bit uncertain about when we're going to reopen.
Sure.
So like everybody else, we're in a bit of a holding pattern and just seeing what comes of the whole thing when it's over.
Yeah. Now, does your job just kind of halt while you wait and see? Or are you still having to think about what's going to come down the pike for 2020 or 2021 or whenever?
Oh, no. We're still working on next year and the rest of this year, as a matter of fact. So we meet every day, basically video conferencing on the computer because everybody's home. And I still meet with my team of product managers and designers. And we still got a lot of projects in the works and a lot of things that need to be discussed and figured out before next year gets here. We don't want everything to just sort of fall apart while we're sitting around in a holding pattern.
Sure.
So we're looking at it as a good opportunity to sort of get ahead of the curve. And maybe be in better shape when we come out of this.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. I'm trying to imagine that actually happening, but I'm talking myself into feeling good about it.
Well, there's definitely no playbook for this. And I mean, just the fact that pretty much every dealer is closed now, right? They're still shipping. Some of them are.
Yeah. You know, some of the online guys or guys who have a good online business are still working.
Yeah.
But we can't fulfill any orders right now. So they're selling out of whatever stock they have.
Yeah.
And I can't take custom orders at the moment. So people who want custom guitars everybody's just sort of sitting around and waiting. But we're not the only guys in this position, obviously. I've been texting back and forth with Bob Taylor. And, it's scary for everybody involved. So they're in the same boat. I think their Mexico facility for Taylor is still running right now.
Oh, wow.
But he doesn't know for how much longer. It's funny. They're in Tecate, Mexico, and we're much further down in the state of Sonora. So the state of Sonora has closed all their businesses or gone into the stay-at-home policy. And the Tecate area was still operating, but he didn't think it would operate for much longer. Wow. So, yeah, we've been talking and just sort of commiserating a little bit back and forth. And I've also been talking to Steve McCurry at Colling.
Sure.
So all of us are sort of trying to find comfort within the acoustic guitar community, let each other know that we're not all kind of going through this alone, that everybody's facing the same challenges going forward.
It is one of the cool things about this community is that you guys do talk to each other. It's pretty unprecedented. It's pretty cool that guitar guys talk to other guitar guys and gals.
Yeah exactly. And everybody's friends, and we all want to sell as many guitars as we can sell and make as good a guitar as we're capable of making in our respective facilities. And I think certainly in the acoustic side of it, and we've talked about this before, we recognize that if anybody's having success, that ultimately means success for the rest of us.
Yeah.
That means people are, you know, getting more interested in acoustic music and acoustic instruments and trying to move the craft forward. And we visit each other's factories on a fairly regular basis, so we learn from each other. And if somebody's doing something cool, they usually will help you out so you can bring it back to your factory and implement it there. So as a group, we can kind of stay healthy and efficient at what we're doing. Yeah, so it's we're lucky in that sense. It's not we're not locked into some kind of a death match with one another.
Yeah. I mean, from these, I just talked to Richard Hoover on this podcast a week or so ago. I'm just curious, from these conversations you've had, does anyone have a strategy right now? Or is it all just like, well, let's pray this is over by June and pick up our pieces?
Yeah, I think that's a little bit, it's very hard to come up with a strategy when you're not sure of an end date.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's been about, you know, how can you best take care of your employees? You know, what decisions are you know, Bob's talking to Steve about what decisions need to be made to help him out in his particular circumstance. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Taylor's in California and then obviously Collins is in Texas and we're Pennsylvania. So we're about as spread out as you could be. So each state's kind of taking their own approach to some of these things. We're all in a little bit different timelines.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of, you know, obviously Collins is in a little bit different position than Martin and Taylor, just because of size.
Sure.
And you know, resources, things like that. So we're trying to help him out with any advice we can give. But yeah, everybody's just sort of in a holding pattern, just sort of like wondering which retailers are still going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
When we come out of this, what is the appetite for product going to be? You know, if we end up with a lot of unemployed people and nobody has any money, obviously in some cases guitars are a luxury good.
Sure.
And you know, so what is that going to look like? Especially in the case of Taylor and Martin, we have a large international business.
Mm-hmm.
So we're thinking, what does Europe look like? We're talking about those things. And then the thing Bob and I have been talking about more than anything is sort of like material resources, suppliers. That's the real worry. Who's going to, the people who make all the little pieces and parts that we don't manufacture ourselves, especially things that are metal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's that going to look like? When are they going to be up and running? You know, for like Bob's talking about strings. You know, he's using Elixir strings on his instruments. So are they going to be able to supply? When are they going to be up and running? Wow. They may be on a completely different timetable than he is. So, you know, he's got to make sure he's got, just like we do, we got to make sure we have all those things in the supply line going forward. And that's, man, it gets really complex really fast. And it's just so many uncertainties.
Sure.
That we're all just sort of like got our fingers crossed. And I mean, we have faith that we can work our way through it, but it's a little disconcerting. I have emails, you know, like TKL, who makes our cases, they're still running.
Oh.
And they're making like the mask. They're using their, you know, their production facility to make masks to go for people to go over top of the N95 masks that people are wearing. And then, you know, the Fishman guys are completely shut down, you know, for Fishman pickups in Massachusetts. They're in the same boat we are. And of course, they get a lot of their supply from China for electrical components. So there's some uncertainty there about shipping times and things like that. So it's a lot, man. There's a lot going on. Trust me, there's no shortage of things to think about. Trust me.
I mean, I just was shocked to hear you. I mean, no one ever thinks of the world running out of guitar strings, but hearing, you know, knowing how many guitars Taylor makes and in a typical day, like, yeah, I now I'm thinking about it. It's crazy.
Sure. Sure. I mean, a company like Taylor's probably making 700, 800 guitars a day.
Sure.
So So it's at 700-800 sets of strings that they need every single day. You can burn through a lot of strings in a hurry.
Yeah.
And you know, we're in the position where we're making our own strings. However, we got to buy raw material stock, wire stock from somebody. So we have to make sure our supplier is able to get us that wire stock.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the weird thing about this is everyone's on a different timeline. I'm in Seattle where I feel like we were kind of 2 weeks ahead of everyone else. And I've, you know, my son's been homeschooled now for a month, and it took a couple weeks for that to hit the rest of the country. And it's sort of still hitting some parts of the country. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, think of a company like D'Addario.
Yeah.
They're on Long Island. I mean, how long is it before they can open up? I mean, it's a completely different timeline than maybe Ernie Ball, for example.
Yeah.
You know, and they're making strings in Coachella, I think.
Sure.
Down in that area.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sure those guys are going to be on probably very different timelines than when they can open and start to supply. So, yeah, it's going to be, it's going to make for a really, really weird year.
Of course. Yeah. An unforgettable year for sure.
I mean, I really don't think about it. I mean, there's little things like, all right, the Summer NAMM show. You would assume now what it's going to get canceled. Is it? Isn't it? I mean, if they don't cancel it, are dealers going to have the money to go and hang out in Nashville for a few days? I don't know. I mean, there's just so many things because that tends to be a place where we introduce new product. If there ends up not being a Summer NAMM show, then that may move some of our launch dates. Now, all the launch dates for summer stuff are probably going to end up getting moved anyways for other reasons. But we had some of the stuff already, you know, done and ready to go, and we were just sort of waiting at this point. But now we're going to have to sort of look at the marketplace and sort of reevaluate whether or not we want to introduce these products this summer, or do we just want to wait? Maybe do a fall introduction, or do we just want to go ahead and pull it all back till, you know, 2021 NAMM?
Wow. And I forget the stuff that you unveiled in Anaheim in January. How much did all of that see the light of day? Was it all in stores when this hit, or were you still trying to meet that demand?
We were literally shipping the first pieces the week everything started to shut down.
Wow.
I know. It was really, you know, we had a really great launch. We introduced the SC13.
Yeah.
Our new guitar, and man, it was met with a lot of positive responses, which is good because I was really scared and very, very worried about, you know, what the response would be for such a non-traditional product from Martin Guitar. And boy, we were really happy that it got such a positive response. And we were really looking forward to getting it out there and have people experience it. We had all kinds of stuff planned to do for April and May and June. And then this hit, it sort of kind of threw a monkey wrench into it all. So, you know, we maybe shipped 500, 600 pieces. And that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
so,
wow.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So now, you know, I hope it doesn't kill the momentum of it. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have anything to base. I don't have any experience of this kind of thing to base, you know, any future prognostications about what might occur going forward. So, you know, keep your fingers crossed and see what comes of it.
Yeah. Are there folks working in their homes on guitar builds for Martin, like R&D kind of stuff? I know no one's like keeping the assembly line going, but does anybody do stuff kind of like how Andy Powers at Taylor does at home, or is everyone kind of centralized at the big plant?
Yeah, we're all centralized at the big plant. In fact, we want people working on Martin product at home, mm-hmm. just from liability issues and things of that nature. So yeah, all the work that's being done now is really more planning, marketing, sales and distribution based strategies. And then in some cases, trying to slow things up. because, you know, you had stuff planned on arriving at certain dates, and everything is so timing based, and now all the timing is sort of thrown off. So in some cases, you're trying to stop shipments of things because there's no production occurring, and you don't want to incur the cash outlay that would come when somebody ships things to you. And I mean, I think that's going to be the big issue for a lot of small manufacturers and for small stores, is just going to be that sort of cash drain that comes from not operating.
Yeah.
You know, do they have enough cash? Is their balance sheet strong enough to sort of survive however long this is going to be? So we're not sure of that either. Just so much weird stuff going on. It's just, I know it's not stuff when, you know, people tune in to Fretboard Journal podcast. They want to hear about guitars and, you know, what kind of cool stuff is coming and get excited about it from that side of it. And not often do you get a chance to sort of talk about all the business pieces that go into this. It's, you know, how the artistry of the building guitars is really married to the business part of supply chains and materials and cash and all the other things that come with running a business, and how that kind of all muddles together. And you have to really balance all those issues in terms of timings. And it's a lot, you know, when you get into it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the stuff that in a normal time, doesn't really necessarily make for a great magazine article unless it's a business magazine, but hearing you describe it is actually, I think, really eye-opening. And I felt this way the first time we talked, is you just have a great way of kind of telling us laymen, you know, allowing us to kind of think about things in a different way. And so I'm really grateful you're taking the time to do this. It's, have you heard from many dealers who are thrown in the towel? I hate to ask all these depressing questions, but it's a depressing time.
No, I haven't. I think it's probably a little early.
Yeah.
I was having a conversation with our executive team. We have a morning video conference that we do every day. And, you know, our feeling is, you know, we're probably not going to really see the full consequences of this for 3 or 4 months. Because, or maybe even longer, 5 or 6, mm-hmm. because some people may survive in the short term, but they come back, they may be just mortally wounded,
yeah,
financially. And, you know, you don't really, it may be just that sort of first blow that takes all the wind out of them, and they're not able to come back from it. Now, my hope is that a lot of the stimulus stuff that's going to happen will allow a lot of these businesses to survive and to move forward. So that's what we're hoping. But, you know, we're thinking of it globally, you know, because who's going to survive in Europe? I don't know what's going to go on there from a stimulus standpoint.
Sure.
Right. China, Japan, all those places, because they all have an impact on our business going forward. And they have an impact on the guitars that we choose to introduce and design, because the international market for us is, you know, 40-45% of all the guitars we make are going outside the United States. So obviously we have to sort of consider all those things when we're designing instruments. It's not necessarily, I mean, people think of Martin guitar and they think of Americana and they think of bluegrass, but, you know, there's a large market out there who aren't Americans and who aren't playing bluegrass. So that drives some of the design discussions that we have, and, you know, trying to balance satisfying all those different marketplaces. The taste of the guitar player in China is much, much different than the taste of the guitar player in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
They're really not looking for, they're looking for similar things, but not really. They have a very different vibe about them. So we have to consider all those things when we're putting products together.
Since you mentioned it, you know, one of the breakout stars of the NAMM show was that SC13. Did that have a bigger impact or earlier or better pre-orders in some countries versus others?
So this probably stands for a lot of stuff we do. That I mentioned earlier, that's I was a little apprehensive, had some anxiety as we were introducing that product and we were putting it together last year, because it was so different and it was so radically different from what we had done. And I knew I was going to face a certain wave of hate from some people,
sure,
regarding that, because it's not a Rosewood D28 or a derivative of. So that was a very stressful product introduction. So when we took it to the show, the Anaheim show and the 2020 show, I really was not sure what to expect. I was really unsure of who was going to like it and who was going to hate it. And that, you know, I was just unsure. But we got there and I was so surprised and so happy to see how many people, once they got it in their hands and were able to play it, were really turned on by it and really happy. And I thought for a moment there, I kind of thought actually the Europeans would like it more than some of the Americans, but it turned out it was pretty universally well received. I didn't have anybody come up and say they didn't like it or didn't want any of them. In fact, I mean, we were sold out almost instantaneously of everything we could produce in it for year one. So that really took a lot of pressure off. I was really pleasantly surprised at how many of the electric guitar aficionados or magazines and reviewers were especially taken with the guitar. I think it spoke to them, and that was a good feeling, because in a weird way, that's kind of who we were hoping to bring over with the SC13, was sort of that crossover, the person who plays electric guitar 80% of the time, plays acoustic 20% of the time. We really wanted to appeal to that person and to younger people. We really wanted to find guys who are maybe playing harder rock, maybe more metal rock in some cases, an acoustic guitar that worked for them that didn't feel too old-fashioned or old-timey.
Yeah.
So it was good. No, so to answer your question in a really long-winded roundabout way, it seemed everybody felt pretty good about it. It didn't take off in one place more than the other. I was really happy with it. Really happy. Now I'm really sad. And we can't kind of keep that momentum rolling forward because of this. But hey, we take the long-term view on things.
No, I know.
This is hopefully a short-term thing.
Yeah. I mean, I just saw the other day, Corey Congilio did a great little demo video of it. And I was, I love that. And then to hear that only 400 or 500 of them made it out into the world, it's so depressing, but I know there'll be more.
I know. There'll be more. There'll be more coming right behind it. And yeah, you know, we were right in the middle of sort of working on different versions of it to bring out for next year. Some line extensions, different price points and things of that nature. So that's a little bit on hold, even though we have most of the work already done. I really wanted to sort of get that behind us because we're also working on some new things for our authentic line for 2021.
Nice.
And some pretty big changes on some of the products. And I know people are going to probably hear and go, well, what can you change? It's supposed to be a reproduction of the guitar that's already made. But through a lot of research, we found some areas where the current pieces maybe aren't as correct technically as they should be.
Okay.
And so we're going to make some of those corrections going into next year. I can't go too deep into the detail on it. But pretty significant changes to some of the guitars, and just sort of re-looking at that whole family of instruments and how we want to get it out in the marketplace and what we want that to be. Because we hit all the high points on authentics in the past, you know, 37, D18, and 28s, and the obvious products. And we want to keep those in a line, but I think we want to sort of just relook at our strategy there. And which Martin has such a rich history of products. You got 180 years worth of guitars to grab from. So we want to start looking at some different eras of products that maybe we haven't looked at in the past. Nice. See if we can recreate those. Yeah, I think people enjoy it.
Well, you guys also nostalgia. Have the unenviable position where the minute you put something out, George Groon just has to walk over to your NAMM booth or some other esteemed dealer collector and remind you maybe where things weren't perfect or exact.
Exactly. There's usually a long line. It starts with George. And then, you know, Fred Oster from Vintage Instruments would be there, and Richard Johnston would be there, and from Griffin. And you know what? We welcome it, because those are some pretty smart guys, and they really know what they're talking about. And we do miss things from time to time. And then sometimes we have to explain to them, hey, there was a technical reason we had to make a compromise here on something. And so we're getting better at that, fixing some of those technical compromises and finding ways that we can replicate things more exact. And it's funny, many times those guys don't always agree.
Oh, of course.
On the way something should be. So that makes it even more fun listening to them go back and forth with each other. It's funny having one dealer come up to you telling you, hey, the edges of this bridge should be softer or more rounded, and guy coming up saying, no, not really, they shouldn't be that soft or that rounded. Both claiming to be completely sure of what they're saying. So you just kind of go into it with the idea, you know, that you're not going to make everybody happy.
No,
not possible,
not at all. So I want to revisit this conversation after on the other side of this and actually talk about exciting Martin products. But how are you keeping sane right now? What's your strategy? What's your personal way of dealing with this?
For me, it's about keeping my routine as close to the same every day as I can. I don't want to get into this feeling of semi-retirement for a month. Mm-hmm. Because I know once we turn the light switches back on and everybody's back at work, there's not going to be any time to sort of get up to speed. You're going to be expected to be up to speed right off the bat and operating sort of at peak performance. So I'm trying to stay as engaged in our business right now as I can. Like I said, if that means just talking with the team or talking to other guitar makers and just sort of exchanging ideas or thoughts about what's going on, it sort of keeps you engaged. Doing a lot of yard work, I can tell you that.
Good, good.
Making my wife really, really happy. Trying to get some of these house projects finished that I've been putting off for a while in between. But no, the main piece is get up in the morning, don't sleep in too late, don't stay up too late, uh-huh. Fight every instinct I have in my body not to drink too much at night. Because I just want to sit there with a bottle of whiskey at night and watch television. So I try not to allow myself to do that. And make sure you get enough exercise. That's the other piece. You know, sometimes you get stuck in the house and you'll find yourself sitting in front of the TV with a bag of potato chips. And it's probably not a good place to be.
Yeah.
And I'm playing a lot of guitar. So I keep a couple of Martins at the house at all times. So I've got a 00018 and I've got a D18 Authentic, both mahogany guitars, obviously, which I play. I've been playing a lot. And the only thing I actually grabbed out of my office on our last day before we left was my Telecaster.
Nice.
So I grabbed my Tele and I plug it in here, and I've been sitting on YouTube trying to learn something new every night, trying to learn some new lick or not be horribly embarrassing the next time I play in front of somebody. So that's been a real positive and been good. So I've been enjoying that. Plus yeah. My daughter, she's 20 now and she never sees me play electric guitar. So just having her look at me with it is kind of funny, because yeah. I still view myself as 22 years old playing in a rock and roll band, and she sees me as an old man.
It's funny how that works. So,
yeah. Yeah. You don't ever want to see your reflection playing the guitar anymore when you get to be my age, because it's just really disappointing. I used to look so cool and now I just look so old.
I was going to say, and you guys are doing a good job of sharing some cool online things. You've got that Jam in Place kind of live stream thing going, and you had Molly Tuttle on, which is amazing. Totally up our wheelhouse. Yeah. So
no kidding. I know that I saw her last year. I went to the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, and she was headlining there. And man, she just blew me away how good she is. Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
She is good. And that's another piece. I'm disappointed. That's probably going to get canceled. So I was really looking forward to going back to Telluride and seeing the Bluegrass Festival at Telluride.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. I think, Dierks Bentley was going to, headline this year, and I was looking forward to seeing him and talking to him, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
No, a lot of things have been, obviously everything's been canceled. It's painful.
Yeah. So what about, let me ask you a question. Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, cool. I was just wondering, you know, in the publishing business that you're in, obviously, does this really screw you guys up, or are you able to do it all electronically, digitally?
Well, here's the funny thing, and we're in the midst of it and figuring out our new future, just as you and everyone else is. Printers, at least in Washington State and in the handful of places where we printed, are deemed essential businesses. So you may think that guitar magazine is the least essential thing, which is totally understandable in the world.
Not your guitar magazine.
Oh, thank you. But we do have an office in Seattle. I know there are some guitar magazines that are almost all remote, and we mainly use it to, you know, fulfill orders. Somebody orders a bunch of back issues or a t-shirt or something, and then we do our filming of our videos and typically record our podcast there. But you know, no one's touring. We're not doing any video shoots right now. Podcasts, we can all do via Skype, as I'm doing right now with you. So almost everything we normally do, we can do remotely and are doing remotely. What is interesting and scary to me is, you know, what does the newsstand landscape look like after this in terms of guitar stores that carry the magazine, bookstores that carry the magazine? How many of those are going to survive? Are advertisers on the other end of this all going to be wanting to spend some marketing money? I'm viewing this as an opportunity to hopefully maybe become a little more immune to those factors, which is why we're pushing subscriptions so much and encouraging people who maybe haven't checked us out, like, hey, get a PDF subscription, dip your toes in the water. We think you'll love it, and you'll be supporting all this free stuff that we put out that you've enjoyed over the years. And that's been working. Like, our subscription drive initiatives have actually, you know, it's business as usual, which I think is better than every other business out there right now. I don't know what 6 months from now things are going to look like. I don't want to have a day job. This is my life. So I'm not going anywhere. I've been doing this for 15 years.
I know the feeling.
But
late to start working now.
Yeah, it really is. On a good day, you'll ask me that question and I'll say, this is an opportunity for us to become immune to these fickle, you know, environments. On a bad day, it's like, oh, the sky's falling and we're all screwed. So, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah. Sounds familiar.
Yeah.
See, we're not that far apart on things.
A lot of weeklies and regional magazines are really, like, they're really sweating bullets. We're in a place where we've always had a great well of content, you know, a couple issues out that we could dig into, and we've always, I don't know, I just hope that our, you know, on the other side of this, the economy is, you know, strong enough that people have some semblance of normalcy and it's not doom and gloom. You know, I hope people still are interested in the arts and their favorite hobbies.
Yeah, me too. You know, you brought up a good point, which is you talked about how you could maybe immunize yourself from these kinds of situations in the future by making certain business decisions today or going forward. And I'm wondering, that's one of the other things we've been wondering about, you know, within our own industry, for the guitar industry, is people are so reliant on multiple suppliers around to do everything. How many people are going to try to maybe vertically integrate their businesses?
Yeah.
And by that, I mean, I'm going to use this as an example. This is a project, it's not a factual one, but just as for argument's sake, as you know, we were talking about strings. You know, well, the guitar companies who currently don't make their own strings, will they try to get into the string business to sort of immunize themselves from this situation? Or people who are buying their cases from people who aren't making their own cases, you know, that's another one, because so much of that, especially in terms of gig bags and things like that, are imported from overseas. And the big one, you know, one of the ones that we talk about all the time is things like tuning machines.
Yeah.
No guitar manufacturer makes their own tuning machines.
That's wild.
I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? It's actually a pretty high cost piece of the guitar, and there's a lot of variability, but nobody does it because it is so different from what we do, because it's metal and there's a lot of plating and things that, you know, it's kind of a messy business in that sense. So they're all done someplace else, and almost all of it's done outside of the United States, with the exception of a few companies, obviously. But I keep wondering if other guitar companies are going to start to think, maybe we need to just insulate ourselves from these issues in the future, you know, and try to buy some of these companies. So I'm thinking that maybe, is there going to be some sort of consolidation of these suppliers?
Yeah.
Will these suppliers maybe who are get weakened in this, some of the bigger players are able to go out and purchase them and sort of kind of come in as that angel investor and own a piece of some of these crucial or key suppliers? I don't know. Just thinking out loud here.
Just to use that example, is there a reason no one's ever tried to make their own tuners? Is it just because these suppliers have been so good and it's like, if you can't beat them, join them? Like, what?
I think some of it's traditional, you know, with the Gibsons and the Fenders of the world, you know, and they're, whether they're using Grovers or whoever, you know, pick a company out there. I think some of it is traditional stuff. So the guitars always had those kinds of tuners on them, and they were always there to supply. And it just seemed like something not worth investing in.
Hmm.
But I don't know. I think going forward that may change. And, you know, then with the advent of China becoming such a big manufacturer and introducing such low cost into pieces like that.
Yeah.
It was very, very difficult, unless you were willing to own a factory in China. It was just from a cost standpoint, it just didn't make sense. You could buy, you know, a set of tuners from China for $25 or make them yourself in the United States for $100 a set. Well, you know, as people trying to control cost, they just choose to purchase the tuner from China.
Yeah.
When before China, it was Japan, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then after Japan, it was Korea. You know, it just went down the road. Who knows where it'll be next? But, yeah, not too many guitar people are making any of their own metal parts. I think Fender makes some. I'm sitting here looking at my Telecaster, and I think they actually stamp the tray where the bridge and the rear pickup are. I think they do that themselves. And that makes sense, because they make amplifiers and things, so they do some of that metal work.
Yeah.
But Gibson didn't do any. We didn't do any when I was at Gibson.
Wild.
It is wild. There's a lot. I know. I'm rambling a bit here. We're trying.
No, it's great. What songs are you working on?
Right now, I've been playing. What was it? I was just playing Rebel Rebel. David Bowie.
All right. Nice.
Yeah, it's just a simple picking thing, but I was like, I always wanted to figure it out, and I could never figure it out on my own, so finally I had to look it up online. Somebody was on there giving the tutorial, and I said, oh, Jesus, that's so easy. How could I not figure that out myself? But it's so often it's something simple like that. It's sort of like these classic rock songs that have been stuck on my phone and music, and I've always never taken the time to actually sit down and learn them.
Yeah.
So I've been having fun trying to learn some of that stuff.
It's a good time to take a Skype lesson or dive into YouTube right now.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. And you get lost in there. It's a black hole. You know, once you start learning one thing, you see all these people on there, and everybody's such a great player online. And you mentioned Corey playing our SC, and he's such a great player.
No, it's ridiculous.
All it does... Yeah, I know. It makes me feel bad about myself half the time.
I know.
I'm smart enough to know where my talent level lies, and it's pretty low. So I'll stick to the rebels of the world. There won't be any alternate picking stuff going on for me. Trust me.
All right. Maybe on the other side of this, though, with enough Skype lessons
on
YouTube, yeah, you'll be a virtuoso.
If this goes on long enough, yeah, I could come out. It'd be like Robert Johnson at the crossroads. This could be my crossroads right here. Sell my soul.
There you go. All right. On that note, Fred, thanks for talking to us.
Hey, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
Stay safe. Everybody out there, please stay safe.
Yeah.
We'll get through this, and we'll be back to making iconic good guitars for everybody soon, I hope.
Yes, definitely.